Hello and welcome to Colonial Consoles. My name is Malik Johnson. I am the program director here at RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. And with me is Garrett Roberts, the arts and entertainment manager at RMU Century Media. Garrett, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm here to talk video games.
That's right. You're listening to Colonial Consoles, RMU Century Media and RMU Radio's premier video game podcast, where we discuss what we've been playing and talk about the games that have gotten our attention. You might not have heard, you actually haven't heard the lost episode where we discussed Persona 3 and Persona 5 and how those are better and how Persona 3 is the best game of the series.
And I argue that, hey, Persona 4 is pretty good.
Yeah, he argues it, but he doesn't win. And we also talk about how Persona 5 doesn't live up to expectations. But first, we're going to start off with a new segment. It doesn't have a name yet, but we're just going to talk about what indie trash we've been playing lately. So I recently bought Creature in the Well. And if you don't know what Creature in the Well is, it's $14 on the eShop, and it is on Xbox Live Arcade, or Xbox, whatever the store for Xbox is, the Microsoft store. But yeah, it's basically a dungeon crawler mixed with a pinball machine, which is an interesting concept, you would think.
Yeah, you caught my interest.
You don't really see these two mixed together, but you play as, they're called an engineer, and you go to fix this weather machine. I'm still really early in the game. I bought the game, I think, 2 days ago. You have this machine that I guess is supposed to control the weather, and it's been broken for a millennia or some undisclosed amount of time, and there's this monster that inhabits it, the creature in the well. So that's it. Those are the only, it's just you and this creature. That is the only enemy that you have in the game. You have a sword that you attack these little balls of light, balls of energy, and you bounce them off of the walls like you would in pinball. And through that, you collect energy. I guess you siphon off the energy that comes from that, and you loot, and you use that to open doors that get you further into each dungeon. And each dungeon then concludes with a fight with the creature in the well that uses kind of the mechanics that are introduced. So the mechanic, I finished the first dungeon. The mechanic that is introduced is laser beams. And laser beams will, they'll catch the balls of light on fire and they'll injure you. But what you can do is you can charge up your sword and it will like attract all of the balls of light. So you can use that as kind of a defense mechanism against the laser beam pinballs. And you can then deflect those out into the world and into the room.
So, I guess, after kind of explaining it, how good is it?
It reminds me of, do you remember Titan Souls? The game that came out for Vita, PS4, and it was just a bunch of boss rushes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a similar feeling to Titan Souls as I did. I have a similar feeling to Creature in the Well as I did Titan Souls. I wish there was more pinball involved in the pinball dungeon crawl. In theory, it sounds really cool. And maybe I'm just not playing it at a high enough level, but it's kind of just feels like smashing balls of lights into walls and charging to catch them later. So it doesn't feel really like pinball yet, but maybe further in the game or maybe as you get in a higher level play, it becomes more like pinball, but right now
it's just smacking things with a stick.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, it sounds interesting on the like surface level, but I guess as you get deeper, it's just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you're
probably
doing the same thing over and over again.
What's really interesting is there's no enemies. It is just the creature in the well. That is your only enemy that you fight once a...
The enemy the whole time was yourself, you could say.
Well, no. It's not there yet. Maybe it is later, but I don't know.
Not quite yet. You were the creature in the well.
You were the creature. Well, no, apparently there's like this race of engineers that are supposed to like keep track of this machine, and this creature in the well kills all of them. And then you are just this last remaining engineer that I guess didn't answer the call to fix this machine, and like thousands of years later you come back and they're all like, "Where were you?" Like, there are NPCs in the game, and they're like, "Oh my goodness, I haven't seen an engineer in millennia." Why are you here? Where were you? And the creature in the well, he talks to you throughout the game, and he's like, look, dude, I've killed your entire race. I will kill you. Please stop fixing this machine.
Dude, don't do it.
Yeah, basically.
I guess to kind of, like, bounce off of that, over the summer... I made a joke. To kind of bounce off of that, over the summer I've been playing Hollow Knight. It kind of has that, like, empty feeling, but with more enemies in it.
Yeah, I heard great things about Hollow Knight.
The best way to describe Hollow Knight is it is bug Dark Souls. Everything's, like, centered around bugs and insects, but it has the aesthetic of Dark Souls. So kind of you get that feeling of loneliness that Dark Souls does really well with, like, oh, there's no music, you know, you're traveling alone.
Is it Metroid X Dark Souls?
Yeah, it's essentially that. And it's a difficult game, but it's not like Dark Souls, this is not. I guess a big problem with kind of indie games who try to do big things is what's going to keep drawing you in? Is the story of this game going to be like, oh, the monster keeps, like, there's a deep story of, oh, the monster wasn't bad, you know, they were, and you find this out, or is it just going to be, hey, you have to go kill this thing. Go do it. It shouldn't have to feel like a chore to beat a game. And that's the thing that indie games kind of fail at, is the storytelling of, like, why do I want to do that?
See, I disagree. I think indie games probably have some of the better storytelling. I'm also very pro indie game. I love indie games. I have a Transistor poster in my dorm. Transistor.
Yeah, I have it downloaded. I still need to play it.
Yeah, I think you're one of the people who I was like, this game is $4. This is one of the best games of the PS4 generation. Play it, please. But yeah, I think indie games, they're like, I understand, you know, I don't want to go to the cliche and be like, oh, Call of Duty doesn't do a good job at propelling you forward. But, I mean, you're in a room, you kill some guys, you go forward. And, I mean, it's the same thing with, like, Binding of Isaac. There's some guys, you kill them, you go forward.
Mm-hmm. And it's an issue, I think, with games in general, is bad storytelling. But, like, a game like Hollow Knight, where the story is more centered on the world building.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I'll touch on in one of our later topics, too, is having... Yeah. An amazing, well-built world with all this lore, and then the story's like,
I guess it's
the Jedi ghost.
Wait, are we in agreeance on the... I guess we're going to talk about Fire Emblem Three Houses later. Are we in agreeance on Fire Emblem Three Houses
having a bad story?
Well, I just don't think it's a good game, but...
Oh, I think there's plenty of good in it. I think it's just...
Yeah,
There's no reason to play. Anyways, to get back to the indie game.
Get back to the topic. Stay tuned for our Fire Emblem Three Houses discussion.
We thought we were on the same page, but apparently not.
Yeah. All right.
But, I think that's an issue that indie games are kind of facing now, is what's going to drive you to keep picking that game up?
See, I think you said games storytelling is, you know, the problem, and obviously there are games that challenge that. The Last of Us, Uncharted games that are very cinematic and everything. I guess they're not indie games, though.
And those are entirely story. It's just quick time events with...
Yeah. But I think where video games really shine and where indie games really shine here is gameplay. You have to make it interesting to play your game. Which is why, especially during the PS Vita games, the PS Vita game generation, where that was the indie machine, you've seen a lot of shmups. You see a lot of Metroidvanias, because those are very gameplay-centric genres, and it helps roguelikes, and it kind of helps make the game worth it without needing a really deep story. I think Rogue Legacy is a good example from PS Vita. The game doesn't have a story. You just go into a castle, and you kill some guys, and you die, and you keep doing it over and over again. But also there are games like SteamWorld Dig, which doesn't have really great gameplay. It's you just dig holes. But that story gets crazy towards the end.
And there's games that, like, if you're going to sit down and go, I want to play this game for the gameplay, who cares about the story, that work. Prime example, Kingdom Hearts. The story, a lot of people just go, I don't like this. Get Goofy out of here. But the gameplay excels. And those games do work, too. But a lot of indie games, I find, go on, like, the Metroidvania path of having, like, okay, you're gonna sit down at this game for a while, you're gonna go exploring, and then you're gonna sit it down for a while, then you come back and you're like, do I really want to do this more? And
yeah,
there are indie games that excel, like Crypt of the Necrodancer, where it's okay, yeah, you're sitting down, you're playing a rhythm game, it's a couple of hours, you can vary it up, you can play through it again, there's DLC that adds more. But a lot of games just, they don't offer enough to bring you back in.
Yeah, I agree. There are games. Bravely Default is one that comes to mind. I hated that game.
Well,
that the game's twist. Spoilers for Bravely Default. I don't care. It's not a good game. Don't play it. You just redo the same. I think after the third time, I just quit and I never played it again. After you go back in time for the third time and they're like, hey, do all of the boss fights over again. There's nothing actually difficult, different about them. Except now you have this flying thing that gets you from area to area quicker. And there's no story except for you doing them over and over again. And I was like, no.
And I feel like that's kind of what I feel comes from a lot of indie games. Is, okay, yeah, we thought of this innovative gameplay design, but we're going to make you do it over and over again. Like, as you were explaining, like, oh, yeah, you get the balls of light and it's like the pinball mechanics, but there's not anything to, like, reward you for kind of keep going with that. It's a, there's occasionally pinball, and then, like, you're in a dungeon, but, eh.
Yeah, and again, I'm still working my way through the second dungeon, so maybe it'll get better as
I go. It's definitely one to keep us updated.
All right, and I guess now we move on to our next discussion point. Fire Emblem Three Houses. This game came out over the summer if you lived under a rock. It is the next game. It's the first Fire Emblem game on a home console since the GameCube, if I'm correct. Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn on Wii. What? That's a real... Okay.
It's like $70.
So the first game on home consoles since the Wii, the first game that people really care about since the GameCube.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, we haven't had a... There was a very large lull in Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that's definitely been a series that they've been trying to bring back. Well, what was it? I had read that Fire Emblem Awakening was supposed to be the last game in the series, and then everybody loved it. And they were like, well, I guess now we got to make more Fire Emblem games.
Because it essentially wasn't a Fire Emblem game. It was an they updated it to be more friendly for new people to come into.
Yeah, Fire Emblem Awakening was my first Fire Emblem game. And then I've played Fates afterwards, and I didn't really like Fates. I didn't like the split story, and I didn't really care about the gameplay, and 3DS was on its way out at the time.
And in all honesty, the characters weren't...
They tried to lean too much into Waifu Simulator, and I was like, I just want my strategy game with swords and unicorns.
And then the Fire Emblem gods heard you, and they brought down...
Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Fire Emblem Three Houses.
But they also brought a Shin Megami Tensei game, because that's what I really want.
Oh, yeah, you got Persona Emblem.
No. I need the new Shin Megami Tensei game.
When is that coming out?
They haven't announced anything about it. They haven't spoken about it since they announced the Switch.
They're like, hey, it's coming out eventually.
Hey, guys. Hey, nerds. We're doing this.
It'll come out eventually.
Come out when I'm 30. Yeah, so I guess we're going to lay it all out on the table. I don't think this game was good. I think the first half of this game was... Interesting.
What do you define as the first half, then?
Before the big twist.
Before the big twist, okay. Yeah.
Spoilers. We're going to go into spoilers for Fire Emblem Three Houses.
What do you define as the big twist?
The big twist is when... What's her name? Not I want to say Esdeath, but that's not...
Edelgard.
Esdeath is the villain in Akami Ga Kill.
Excuse me, what? I just... Are you speaking English?
No, I'm speaking Japanese. It's a really great anime about a group of assassins that try to take down an emperor. You gotta watch it. It's good. But Esdeath is the villain in that. Edelgard, when Edelgard declares war on the church, I consider that the first... I consider that the big twist. That was, you know, Fire Emblem games. Traditionally, Chapter 13 is where they have their big twist, and that's where the story kicks off. That happens in Chapter 13. So I think after that, the game commits... Well, one, I think the first half of the game, everyone is always like, I want a Persona game where we're in college. And I think Fire Emblem Three Houses is exactly the reason why you do not want that game.
Really? Because I thought that that part was kind of like interesting.
I think it's good. I think it is good. The school parts of it. But I
specifically the monastery. But
yeah, the monastery parts
really
of it.
Is that really a school?
Yeah, it's a school. You guys, you're going. But I think the class idea was interesting. But it is. It just amounts to. Hey, just scroll on some menus, I guess.
Oh, you could completely skip over that.
Yeah, and you can skip over it, which to me is kind of like, why would you play? Like, that's the first half of the game is essentially is the menus and whatnot.
I mean, it's an RPG. It's a menu navigator.
Yeah.
But I honestly found that part kind of like the teaching aspect of it. Because you know about the hidden abilities, right?
Yeah, the hidden abilities. And
which they're not all of them are good, but some units you can make into absolute monsters.
Oh yeah,
specifically Bernadetta. Felix.
Bernadetta can shoot. Bernadetta is like one of the archers that can shoot from like across a map. It's amazing.
And once you can move through people, you just start hovering over the battlefield with her, and just you're dead.
Yeah, I gave her a horse, and I was like, "Ooh, this is great."
But
that
like
extra movement, I was like, "This is amazing."
I find that part useful for building those skills, and then it kind of eliminates the, oh, it's the end of the game, and I have a B rank, so I can't use this cool weapon I just got.
Yeah.
Because you can absolutely push a unit into going S rank and something.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I did it with Shamir, Catherine. I've done it with plenty of units. Claude. And I think the first half is the better part of the game. I think the first half also hurts the second half. Because you're supposed to be, like, in war, and you still go to school. You're still on this, like, month calendar for some reason. And I understand that, like, it's a mechanics thing, and it helps to, like, space out the story. But I would have liked it probably a lot better if they'd cut out the school part after the war started. Because it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Here I am teaching this knight who...
Has murdered people.
Who has years more experience than I do. How to use a sword, and I'm like, that doesn't make sense.
There was an actual... This is an actual person who has killed and murdered other people, and I am this school teacher. Hey, maybe if you didn't swing that way. You know what? You got a point.
Hey, here's how you ride a horse. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that is a genuine kind of issue with the teaching side of it.
And also, it doesn't make sense. Why am I teaching Bernadette how to use a bow and arrow when my bow skill is, like, an S? When my bow skill is, like, a D or whatever, and Bernadette has an A, how am I teaching her anything?
I guess it's kind of like the main character is customizable enough that if you wanted to make your archers really good, you would just make your main character an archer.
But I don't want to do that. He's a swords person. That's his...
Yeah.
He literally gets a sword in the game.
And I guess kind of, while the school mechanic is lackluster, it also kind of helps you add some logic to the, what do they call it? It's not a social link in Fire Emblem. What is it? The,
I don't remember.
Essentially, the persona social links that you do with the students kind of reward you for that. Like, I think that Fire Emblem, and this is what I think the biggest criticism of the game could be, is that its story is kind of lackluster compared to the world building characters. Like, there's so much lore behind everything they do.
Oh yeah.
You can read into it and you go, wow, this is like, it's like a very well thought out D&D campaign. There's a lot of material. You're like, oh yeah, this is real great. But your players don't care about that. They want to know what the story is. And you're like, well, there's this old story. Yeah, but like, we're sitting here in a library bored.
Like, I don't want to hear you read the story that you made up. I want to know.
Let me kill something.
Play the story that you made up.
I want to be a part of the story. I don't want to hear about the other stories.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we can talk about the story. I think the twist is poorly, like, foreshadowed, especially when you play through the Black Eagle route. It's so terrible, and maybe it's because it was my second playthrough, but it is so terribly foreshadowed. Like, literally, Hubert, the guy who betrays the church with Edelgard, he looks like a bad guy. Like, he is one of two Dark Knights, Dark Mages, or whatever.
Have you done the social link with him for that? Like, with any other character? Like,
I
just
did
Hubert and anybody else.
Hubert and Bernadetta, I think I did.
Where he's just like, hey, I kill people for a living.
Yeah.
And they're like, Jesus, man, why are you telling me this? And he's like, because I think it's funny. And then you get, like, background as to him just being like, I was raised to act and look this way so that I would intimidate people. And they're like, okay, we understand you better now. You're not really a cold-blooded murderer. And then he's a cold-blooded murderer later in the story, but...
He's just so, like, literally, I think, during this is a story cutscene. Edelgard is like, oh, you know, one day I'll betray the church. Ha, 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 professor, come with me. Ha, 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 so funny. And Hubert comes up to her afterwards, and he's like, hey, you said too much. And I'm like, well, I guess Edelgard is going to betray the church.
Well, there's another great scene with those two where anytime Edelgard's out of the picture, like, to give some context for people who, like, aren't completely aware with the story, there's a character known as the Flame Emperor, who's essentially the antagonist of the story. And throughout the entire run, you fight them a couple of times in the Death Knight.
I think it's like two or three.
Yeah, it's like two or three per route, I think. And then they eventually reveal that, oh, it was actually Edelgard. But if you pay attention, she's just not there in any of the combats. And at first you think, oh, she went to go do this. You know, it could just be a coincidence and they're trying to mislead me. But then Hubert just walks in and he's like, where is Lady Edelgard? I don't know where she would be. Oh, no. Where is she? Guys, have you seen Edelgard? I can't seem to find her. It's really convenient. She's nowhere near here, near the Flame Emperor.
It's just, it's so bad. And then what, Jiritsa, the guy who they're like, hey, he's definitely the Death Knight. They, like, just middle of the game, and I think it might be just Golden Deer, but they're just straight up like, hey, Jiritsa is the Death Knight. Like, that's who he is. And we're like, okay, well, now we know that this teacher is this. Oh, he comes from the Black Eagle household, and he happens to be this mysterious killer that works with the Flame Emperor, and there's no, like, link or anything or any way to, like, redeem that at all. Oh, okay. So what's going on with the Black Eagles? And then later in the story, oh, we just find this kid that's been in our basement for a whole year. She's just in the Black Eagle household. And she just goes back to the Black Eagle household and doesn't show up ever again.
Now, I don't know if they explain it in Golden Deer, but originally she was in the Black Eagles, like, before she disappeared.
Yeah, she was.
And, like, she's like, oh, yeah, I came back because this is the only people I know. I only really know Edelgard. Like, she's the only one who was kind of here whenever I was going out because I was in my senior year. She was a freshman, like, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But even then because have you played through the Black Eagles?
In the Black Eagle, like, she doesn't she doesn't show up as a unit or anything. And it's like,
why are you here?
What is your purpose, mysterious lady? What is your purpose, mysterious teacher man?
And then you just, like, find out, and you're like, oh.
And then at some point, you definitely walk in on Edelgard, and I think her name is, like, Marissa or something like that, Marcia.
Yeah, something like that.
And she's like, hey, Edelgard, are you still down for the plan?
And hello, have you heard of The Plan?
I'm just like, what is, like, who wrote this?
They talk like cops.
Who wrote The Black Eagle Household? Why can nobody foreshadow anything?
Now, if I understand right, you played through Golden Deer, a little bit of Blue Lions.
I played through Golden Deer. I played through Black Eagle, both routes. I have a little bit of both routes.
So, whenever you go through both routes, though, they kind of go like, oh, there's a reason she's acting evil in secret.
Yeah, but it definitely goes through Edelgard's reasoning and why she does what she does.
She's still not a good person.
She's not a good person, and she's a terribly written villain, but
You can at least see the villain's point of view. You're like, yeah, hey, this isn't a bad, necessarily, villain. It's more of a it's a bad story she was thrown into. If it was any other story,
the potential for the story to be great is what makes me the most upset about this game. Because it's an amazing story. You have these three kids. You have these three kids that go to school together. For some reason, they don't really interact at all, except for like once or twice a year. And then they're thrown in, and it's supposed to be this like emotional turmoil. And this is so emotional. We went to school together. I'm killing all the kids, and it doesn't really matter anyways. Let's talk about that for a minute, because one of the big marketing campaigns was, hey, it's going to really suck to get to know all these kids and then kill them later.
And, I mean, it kind of does. That highly depends on you recruiting from other houses.
Yeah, you have to recruit from other houses for that to matter. So I recruited in my Black Eagles. I didn't really figure out recruiting until my second playthrough. Mm-hmm. There's a secret where if you get to the B rank, they will join your house automatically. I didn't realize that until it was too late. But so I recruited Ash to my Black Eagles household. I need another swords person. And I was like, Ash is a nice guy. He's got gray hair. He's going to be my swords guy.
Small anime boy really helps.
Small anime boy. Good with swords and bows. Oh, convenient. So I recruited Ash. And the first thing that bothers me is that when you recruit from other houses, after the big like reunion, they're not immediately in your party. You have to like seek them out, and you have to seek them. You find them in the story organically. They've already betrayed the army and everything. They're just kind of doing their thing, and then the protagonist specifically has to defeat them in battle for them to then be recruited, which is like, there's so many steps. Like, why am I recruiting this person?
Well, it was the same thing as Awakening. Like, whenever you wanted to recruit a new unit, you had to use either Robin or Crom.
Yeah. And that makes sense, but I already recruited him. Like this guy has like literally fought alongside us for years. He was there for the big promise that we make at prom.
You and this person could be in A rank where you guys are borderline like, hey, you down?
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm gonna go fight for my actual country. Sorry, but kind of like what makes me angry about that too. Is, oh, you do all the social links. You taught this person. You are their mentor. But then they're like, hey, I don't like you anymore. Now, if you don't kill me, you lose me forever. You know this, like, super weapon I got? Because in my Black Eagles, I recruited Sylvain because I play as the female unit. And if you play as the female unit, Sylvain, you could be E rank and everything. And he goes, you know, I kind of like your house.
Yeah. Yeah, Sylvain, womanizer.
I think your brain is quite large. I really like your personality. And you're like, oh, I get it.
Dimitri tells you he's a skirt chaser.
But you have, like, these great weapons. You boost this unit. You're like, I love it. And then after the time skip, he's thrown out.
Yeah, he's like,
peace out.
Peace out, man. I'm going to fight for the Empire, the Holy Fargus Empire.
And that's another issue with the recruiting is they're like, oh yeah, you'll love to recruit these people from other houses, but
really you don't need. And maybe I don't want to say traditional Fire Emblem player, but I try not to have anybody die. I do not care for, like, I play with permadeath on, but if they die, I just like restart it. And the game like literally like encourages you to just restart just go back a couple turns and save them.
It wants you to bite the dust. To make a JoJo reference, where they have the mechanic where you just press the button that you completely forget about until you're like playing on your Switch in the middle of the night and you're like, wow, I can rewind time in this game? I forgot about that. And then it encourages you not to kill them, so why would you need to recruit? Because you can have your entire class out, but not an extra person. Ferdinand, everyone's favorite, I just pushed off to the side and said, goodbye, Sylvain is replacing you because he's better in every single way.
Yeah, I forget who I pushed out for. Black Eagle wasn't like a great house. There are too many mages in Black Eagle, and that's what bothered me.
I mean,
each house is supposed to have their specific like focus. Like Golden Deer is supposed to be archer, Black Eagle is supposed to be mages, and then Blue Lion is supposed to be, I guess, swords people or lance people. And I think Black Eagle is probably the weaker of those because of it. Black Eagle just has a bunch of mages, and mages are usually like glass cannons. And in the beginning of the game, there's no such thing as a glass cannon unless you're Lysithia.
And you have some potential there, like with Dorothea, where you can be like, oh, I'm going to use this as my healer, but you have a better healer and mage in your class.
Yeah, Dorothea is really good late game, but I also boosted her sword skill so that she can like fight up close.
Oh yeah, I used the Levin sword and like fire, and then oh look, you're standing far away from me, well you're dead. But there's no reason to recruit anybody. You can make your units work however you want.
Yeah.
The weapon triangle disappearing was probably not for the best in that regard. Because you don't have that level of strategy where you're going, oh, I need to think, like, I can let this unit die in this battle, and I won't have this unit again. But also, I get to save this one who can be more useful. I have 10 axe users. Everyone remembers Vike from Awakening. You'll get rid of Vike to save, like, any of the dragon units because you're like, oh, that's a good unit. Sorry, Vike, you're going to die.
Those Falcon Knights, man. Tragic.
And there's not, like, any... I guess that kind of hurts with the Masterclass and stuff, too, is everyone can be the same thing.
Masterclasses are also not that great. Like, there's one good Masterclass for a swordsperson. The, whatchamacallit, the Mortal Savant. And in order to be the Mortal Savant, you also have to raise up your magic skills. So, like, for instance, Felix, there's no reason for Felix to know magic. I think he might have, like, a hidden ability in it or something, but, like, normally, like, there's no, like, Felix is a swords person. I don't want him to use fire. I want him to use his sword.
And the same thing kind of, like, holds true for, oh, yeah, Bernadette. Why would I get her to ride a horse? She's not on a horse. Nothing in her personality goes, I should ride a horse. Bow Knight, you need to have a high rank in horse if you want to get this class.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, why can I not just have her be? And then I think it's Claude who, I think through most of the game, he is like, oh, hey, I like bow and arrows. I'm a bow and arrow guy, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, after the time skip, he's like, oh, hey, my people, we ride wyverns.
We ride dragons now.
We ride dragons. Hey, my culture rides dragons. We're also big axe people. And I'm like, well, Claude, that'd be really nice to know a year ago when I was planning out how I was going to use you as a unit.
You know, whenever I asked you, what do you want to study? And you went, bows. Why didn't you go axes and wyverns? It would help.
Yeah, maybe you would be in a better spot than you are now. What is it? Who is it? The priest guy. His name starts with an S. He becomes an axe and wyvern rider. He comes to you as a wyvern rider with a low wyvern riding skill. I don't understand how he is on this dragon. And then, like, he joins fairly, I mean, I guess mid-game, but still, he's not a super useful unit. He's not very strong. He comes in with low skills compared to everybody else. I'm like, why would I use you? I'm, like, struggling to teach you how to ride dragons. Meanwhile, protagonist has never ridden a dragon before.
Yeah, what if you just tried calling it Shirley?
Just pet it different. Just go ahead and pet it. Okay.
Have you ever seen Dragon? Like, How to Train Your Dragon? Maybe if you, like, watch that movie a couple times with it and
see what happens.
See what kind of naturally evolves from there. I've had some college professors who are about as useful as the protagonist of Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yeah, it's... but yeah, so I don't think the game is that... I think it is... I think it's a good... an okay game. I think it doesn't live up to... I don't want to say it doesn't live up to Fire Emblem status, because it's... Fire Emblem status isn't great, but...
It's subpar after Fates, but...
Yeah. But it just... it could be so much better.
I feel that there was a lot of great potential. The story isn't great, but I keep going back to play it. I'm going, okay, I want to see this through because the gameplay is good for Fire Emblem. The music is good. It looks good. So I just want to keep playing it and going like, oh, hopefully there's some DLC that makes this story like Route 4. You get everyone's friends in the end, and then you fight the... ending of the Golden Deer House.
Nemesis.
Yeah.
Oh, also, all the story missions are the same. For the most part, like...
they're the same until the ending, because every ending boss is different. And, yeah, like, if they had done that for every mission, like, that's something Fates did well.
Yeah.
Is...
well, that was two separate games.
Oh, yeah. It was two entirely different games, but...
you had to actually pay for the two separate games.
This is on a home console. Why couldn't they go, like, okay, well... you know, this mission's different, and, oh, here's a different requirement you have to do.
I'm not even upset about them being, like, the same map and troop layout. Literally, if the setup was different. Like, literally, it's, like, Golden Deer. They're like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, Claude grew up with this lady. We're going to have her bring troops. Oh, no, we're ambushed. And then when you play through the Black Eagle route, it's the same thing. We're like, hey, we're going to send a letter to Claude, and Claude is going to send a letter to his lady friend that he grew up with. And she's going to send, oh, no, we got ambushed in the exact same spot by the exact same commander. And the exact same troops are there. And the exact same mission requirements. I'm like, why am I playing through this game another time if it's just the same missions over and over again?
Like, even if it was in the Golden Deer route, let's say, when it comes to the war part, your goal is to get to the other side of the map. For Blue Lions, it's okay. You need to defeat the enemy commander. And then for Black Eagles, if you sided with Edelgard, it's eliminate everybody. Leave no troops standing. That would have been more interesting because you're like, okay, I got to change up my strategy. I can't just have my flyers blast through the map.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even care that it's the same troops. I just want a different like map. Like the story is the exact same leading up to when you get to Shimbala, which is... also, I love... my favorite anime tropes, one, the protagonist has to be Jesus or God of some sort. Two, Shimbala is never a good place. I don't understand why everybody hates Shimbala, but...
because the entire plot for this game, this is my spicy opinion of the day, was them looking and leaning into the mic and going, church bad, and hearing a couple of claps and them going... fight the church, and people going, yeah, this is revolutionary. The church bad. We've never heard this plot before.
I don't even just Shimbala. Everybody hates Shimbala. I want a good Shimbala game. I want somebody to like be like, you know what? Shimbala is the place. Shimbala is the place where you're gonna get to. Shimbala is the ending of One Piece. I just want something good for Shimbala.
One Piece will never end.
One Piece will never end. You can keep adding islands until you fall over.
So, I guess, what kind of score would you give Three Houses?
Seven. Seven good. Seven on the... are we doing 20-point scale or are we doing 10-point scale?
Let's do 10 points starting at 5.
10 points starting... so 5 is good.
5 is like, this is the most average game I've played. 5 is like...
Give me Persona 4. Yeah, give me the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Give me the like rankings.
A 5 is baseline, it's average, and that's not necessarily good, but it's not bad. 6 is okay, it's good, it has some redeemable qualities, but still not, like, amazing. 7 is, this is pretty good. 8 is, wow, this is really good. 9 is, this is amazing. And 10 is, hey, if I had to choose one game to live through the apocalypse, this would be that game.
I'd say 6. It's good. It's not, you know, run out and buy a Switch 4, but but if you have a Switch, it's something good to play.
I'd give it a solid 7 or 8. Just it's a really good game that suffers from a horrible story. This is coming from a Kingdom Hearts fan, though, so, like, tread lightly.
Yeah, I'd say 6. So we err somewhere on the 20-point scale. We would err somewhere on the, like, 7 or 6.5, 7 area. So, like, good.
Yeah. It's a good game. It's just not... The potential. Like the Persona 5 in the last episode.
The potential.
The implication of danger.
We've been watching a lot of Seinfeld lately.
It's Always Sunny quote, but okay.
Oh, that is an Always Sunny quote. Never mind. I watch too many sitcoms that are all about nothing. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. That was Colonial Consoles for the week of September 9th. For the week of September 9th. My name is Malik Johnson. I'm a program director here at Army Radio. With me, Garrett Roberts, the arts and entertainment manager at Army Century Media. Be sure to tune in. Every week, we're going to have a new Colonial Consoles episode out with you. Somehow, we're going to have games to talk about every week. Hopefully, we can afford it, and I can afford my apartment at the end of the semester.
Hey, I'll have Borderlands 3, like, at least a couple hours in it next week. So.
All right, so that's what we'll talk about next week. Tune in for Borderlands 3.